Ahoy, Mets fans. Welcome to another breaking news pod here on Amazing Avenue. We are gathered today, and by we, I mean myself, Brian Salvatore, along with Allison McCaig and Lucas Lajos, to talk about the Mets signing Jose Quintana to a two-year contract. The deal is worth $26 million that is evenly split between the 2 years. Quintana is going into his age 34 season, coming off of a very good year. He split between the Cardinals and the Pirates. He's left-handed, which feels relevant to this conversation. Allison, I want to start with you. Does this move get you excited? Does this seem like a smart decision, et cetera, et cetera?
It's not a splashy move. It's not a sexy move, but I think it's a smart decision. I think whether I get excited, truly excited about it, is dependent on whether this is the Taijuan Walker replacement or whether this is also the Chris Bassett replacement. If it's the latter, then that's not very exciting at all. But in a vacuum, if we're just evaluating this contract for what it is, I think it's a very smart move by the Mets. If you look at the pitchers who signed yesterday in Taijuan Walker and Jameson Taillon, and they got fairly comparable contracts because they were seen as like fairly comparable pitchers on the market, and the Mets were connected at least to Taillon fairly seriously. You look at the contracts they got 4 years, roughly $70 million, both of them. And that's, to me, like a pretty, like, that's more than I thought either one of those two would get going into the offseason. And I don't see Quintana as that much of a step down from those, but he's much cheaper. And so I think that the Mets made a very smart move here. And that is all predicated on, like, if they also go out and get a mid-rotation starter a la a Bassett, a Kodai Senga, something like that. If they do both of those moves, then I think that the rotation is, like, very well set up for success this season.
Lucas, anything to add to that or any dissensions there?
No, I think that covers it pretty nicely. First off, that Taijuan Walker contract is insane. I mean, good for Taijuan getting paid, but good Lord, what the hell are the Phillies doing? At least the Jameson Taillon contract, you can squint and look at like potential maximizations of his pitch mix, and he has certain characteristics that teams are going to think they can fiddle with some more. Now, whether that's wise or not is a different discussion, but you can squint and see further upside there. Walker doesn't have that, and the Phillies just guaranteed a dude with a long history of shoulder problems and a not totally clean health record over the last 2 years, $72 million. So there's also, I think, an argument that Quintana is as good a pitcher as Walker. He had a better ERA last year, and that's certainly flawed, but I mean, it means something. They had similar stat pass metrics in terms of WOBA and expected WOBA, and problems with expected WOBA aside, that also has to mean something. Baseball Prospectus's more advanced metrics like DRA minus say that Walker was pretty significantly better. Quintana about 10% below league average by that metric. But bottom line here is there's a defensible argument that the Mets signed a pitcher as good as the one they lost for, like, what is that, a third of the money in total, and 75% as much AAV. Like, that's a really nice move there. But I do agree with Allison that they should add another starter still. Seems like the Senga rumors are real, and that'd be a nice finishing move here.
Yeah, that would be, to me, that is the piece of this that makes me feel the best, is that they're not out on Senga yet. And presumably that means that even if they don't land Senga, they're still in on another piece of that sort of general quality, which is what they need, because, you know, David Peterson may turn into something. Every year that goes by, I think that's less and less of a possibility. And if you're building a team to win now, you kind of need to go all in and just let them win now. And so that, to me, that also means they got to bring back Brandon Nimmo. They probably need another bat. I would like them to replace the Darren Ruff spot in the roster with somebody who can actually hit. Although I think there's a very compelling argument to be made that Darren Ruff had a historically bad stretch of his career with the Mets, and that the real Darren Ruff, quote unquote, is probably much better than that. But I would still like to upgrade there. But that's, you know, that's a conversation for a different day, I believe.
I mean, I think at this point, and again, reiterating, they should absolutely sign another. Mid-rotation is underselling Senga and Bassett a little bit, I think, but they're also not top of the rotation guys, so call them like somewhere in that middle, in between that. I think they absolutely need to sign one of those guys. But if push comes to shove and there had to be a choice made here, I'd rather be giving a rotation spot to David Peterson or whoever at the back of the rotation and bringing back Brandon Nimmo than adding another starter and relying on like Kevin Kiermaier in center field. Like, at this point, to me, there is no higher priority than bringing back Brandon Nimmo, just because there are no alternatives, right? There are literally no other viable starting center fielders in free agency, and I don't know that I see any on the trade market either. Now, maybe you think Brian Reynolds is that, but he's not a real center fielder given his defensive metrics last season. So, like, I think at this point they need to be hyper focused on Nimmo, and I don't know that they are.
Yeah, I can agree with that assessment. I like, if you had to pick one or the other, bring back Nimmo or sign a mid-rotation starter, I think that Nimmo is probably a higher priority, because, you know, at this point you have David Peterson, Tyler McGill, Joey Lucchese, Elysier Hernandez, like those, all of those guys competing for one rotation spot. It was never going to be acceptable for them to compete for two rotation spots. That was never going to be okay. Now we're at least at the point where that is only filling one rotation spot. Obviously, I would feel even more comfortable if all of those guys are relegated to injury depth.
Yep.
But, you know, Nimmo is, there's no one, there's no depth behind like the Nimmo replacement. That like that just has to happen. Whereas they can weather not getting another pitcher. I would prefer they did.
Yes.
But they can weather not getting another pitcher. I don't think that they would weather very well in the outfield not replacing Nimmo with either Nimmo himself or someone as good as him, which doesn't really exist on the free agent market, like Lucas said. I think there's like a couple of outcomes, possible outcomes here. I think the worst possible outcome is like obviously them being done right now, which I don't think is probable at all.
No,
even that Passan tweet, it seems like everyone expects them to just keep spending like drunken sailors, which is fine.
Hey, and once you go over
right,
that threshold,
which is great.
you kind of might as well, right? Like
you might as well.
Yeah.
Right now, they are already over the threshold.
Mm-hmm.
They have just, with the Quintana contract, they went over the Steve Cohen tax, they're calling it. They went over the Steve Cohen tax. So what's the difference between $10 million over and $50 million over? Really not that much. So I think that them like being done, I mean, they're never going to be done, but I think that them being done with major things is also not very probable. I think the next worst outcome is the outcome that Lucas mentioned, where they just sign the starter and they do Kevin Kiermaier instead of Brandon Nimmo, which would be a significant downgrade. And then I think the next kind of worst outcome is they bring back Nimmo, but they don't sign the starter. And then after that, it's like there's kind of two possible best case scenarios. There's either they go all out in free agency and they sign the Kodai Senga, Chris Bassett equivalent, and also sign Nimmo. They could do that. Or they could bring back Brandon Nimmo and trade for a Chris Bassett equivalent, do the Chris Bassett trade that they did, but for somebody else who's maybe not making a lot of money, but is that mid rotation starter. So that way they could save a little bit of money. They'd have to give up prospects, obviously, that they probably don't really have at this point, and I don't think they want to part with Beatty and Alvarez. But they could pull that off again. It didn't take that much to get Chris Bassett in the first place. They could do something like that again to fill that slot via agents.
There's the rumor out there that the Rangers want James McCann. So maybe you throw them James McCann and you get something in return, whether you use that something or then you flip that something for a starting pitcher.
Yeah, I don't know what the Rangers have to offer the Mets as far as like James McCann is worthless at this point.
Yeah, but I don't think they'd be offering the Mets anything. Just be like, hey, you want to pay James McCann $8 million for us. All right, he's yours, and that opens up a spot on the bench.
Look, let a boy dream. Okay, I don't think that the Rangers are having a very good. I don't think the Rangers are thinking things through right now. So, you know,
the Rangers have thought things through for like the last 5 years at this point. And I'm not just saying that because they're spending, giving out really big contracts. That's good. It's everything else they do that's really, really bad. Yeah, I just don't. I mean, I think it's as excited as I would be for the Mets to sign Senga. I think this is something that's come up a lot on from Complex to Queens, how we bemoan the Mets just not looking into the Asian markets ever. It'd be really cool for them to sign Senga, but to Allison's point, there's going to be more available starting pitching, I think, than starting quality center fielders on the market. In particular, I was like, if they're so dead set on Nimmo leaving, I don't know why they weren't in on Bellinger, for instance, and it really does feel like we're hurtling towards Kevin Kiermaier opening day center fielder, which does not sound so great.
That would not excite me as much as his sparkling blue eyes would excite me. His play on the field would not excite me much. Well, mostly at the plate, his bat would not excite me much. He is a very good center fielder.
I want to say two things about Nimmo and the sort of current Nimmo situation. First of all, I wish I could go back and play like 2017 Lucas, a bit of him saying that somebody else wasn't a true center fielder, but implying that Nimmo was, because I feel like that would have broken all of our brains in 2017 because we were not.
I think I was on Nimmo being a true center fielder. Now, I also was an idiot back then. I didn't know anything about scouting defense, and I still don't really know that much, but I was also wrong at the time, probably. So who can say?
Who can say? Fair enough. But the other thing I did want to say about Nimmo though is, first of all, I do think Nimmo's coming back. I think they're gonna wind up getting Nimmo back. I just feel like it makes the most sense for both of them to have a reunion. The only hiccup here is just that Scott Boras is his agent, and Boras is going to wring every penny he can out of this, and I don't know if the Mets necessarily want to pay top dollar for Nimmo.
What did he say that the Mets are in a metamorphosis or whatever the hell?
He definitely did do like a Boris Fed line immediately after the offseason started.
Like, he even said it at the start of the winter meetings too.
And this is like old news at this point and may not end up being relevant, but like right after the Mets like lost the wild card round, they interviewed like, you know, the major like departing free agents like Diaz, Nimmo, and DeGrom, and obviously Diaz seemed the most keen on returning, and that ended up playing out, right? And Nimmo didn't seem like not keen on returning, but he talked about the Mets as if they were past tense already, and said like they instead of we, like the organization is in a good place, they blah blah blah. And I feel like a lot of guys would say like, you know, the Mets, we are good, you know, like, but Nimmo was already talking about it as if it wasn't his team anymore, like less than like an hour after the season ended.
So I wonder how much of that is just,
I don't
being
think that
coached.
Means anything. I think that's just Scott Boras.
Scott Boras, yeah.
Yeah. Scott Boras did just get Taiwan Walker $72 million. So respect.
I also have to admit, I was very wrong. And I think, Allison, you said they should have offered him a QO. I did not see Taiwan Walker signing for this much money. And if this was going to be the case, they should have QO'd him.
They should have QO'd him.
100%, yes.
I did not.
I mean, in the end, maybe he would have, I don't know. I guess he would have turned it down because, like, if this was in his future, you know, you turn it down then, and the Mets get the draft pick, which would have been good for them. But, like, if I think that the Mets are in a better position now for having signed Quintana for what they signed Quintana for, essentially, like, replacing Walker for, and that's less than the QO amount, you know?
So, well, that's my point, right? Like, I saw Walker and Quintana as much more similar pitchers, and I didn't see them signing for more than like two high to like basically what Quintana got, or 335. And a lot of times the guys you expect to get that sort of contract just take the QO.
Yeah.
And it's, I guess the Phillies are feeling, I mean, there may be some other stuff that isn't as publicly available on Walker. He does a good job of reducing pop-ups and soft contact and things like that. And I think there are some stuffed models out there that like him more than the public-facing ones might. But yeah, I don't think
Walker
anyone
in
really.
Citizens Bank Park, though?
Well, he's gonna
Man.
like his like I don't
He's
know
gonna give
what
up
is it
some
every.
dingers. Some
Every
dingers.
five, maybe seven starts, he has one of those starts where he's just throwing meatballs over the heart of the plate. It's gonna be ugly in that
Yes.
ballpark.
Like, I don't know. I mean, yeah, like the Mets clearly in hindsight should have QO'd him. And maybe I mean maybe Walker was a Walker and his agent were aware of his market and the Mets were just ignorant of the market, or you know, the Phillies, maybe the Phillies pulled like a Wilpon Mets move and were like, this is our guy that we want to get. We're going to jump the market immediately and get this
More
guy for
power
this
to him,
crazy
man.
contract.
Whatever. I just cannot bring myself to act. I think Brian and I had this conversation yesterday in regards to Turner. I just cannot bring myself to be concerned about the Phillies.
I'm concerned about Trey Turner on the Phillies. That's for damn sure. I don't like the idea of being tormented by Trey Turner again. That does not spark joy.
Just start Nito for all three games. When they play the Phillies, we'll be fine. They'll
Sure,
be fine.
sure.
Yeah. The other thing I did want to
Gotta
bring
hope
up.
his speed declines enough.
So the last thing I did want to bring up about this move is just that this is the Mets continuing to get older in their starting rotation. Quintana's 34 years old, and or he'll be 34 when the season starts. And on a 2-year deal for a lefty, lefties pitch forever. I can talk myself into this not being a problem, but Lucas, I know you have a lot of concerns about the Mets' general pitching age, and this probably doesn't help that too much.
No, it doesn't, certainly. And I think you're talking about a whole different regime of age-related risks when you're as old as Scherzer or Verlander is. And then a guy in his early to mid-30s, like Quintana is. I don't know if that's early or mid-30s, honestly. So it is a bit of a different beast, but I think it's also worth noting how old this roster is. And that's by necessity, right? Like the farm does not have any major league ready starters. Jose Buho is not a viable major league starter. And he's really the only option in the upper minors. So they have no choice, right? They basically have to keep buying older arms like this until they're drafting a development pipeline is up to snuff until it's, I'd say they probably creep back into the middle third of the league, but even then it's going to take a couple of years for that to start to pay fruit so that you don't have to sign Jose Quintana. You have, I don't know, David Peterson, but 5% better and you're okay starting him as your fourth or fifth starter. So it's going to take a couple more years. I still think they need to make some more improvements in that area. And then by the time Quintana's contract rolls off, and maybe Scherzer's and Verlander's contracts fall off, you're hoping that the farm is in a better spot to produce guys like trying to imagine a Dodgers name here that would make sense to Caleb
Clayton
Ferguson
Kershaw. I'm
or
kidding.
yeah, well, you're sure if you could produce a Clayton Kershaw every couple of years, that would be ideal. Let's try to keep our expectations in line. The other thing it'd be good for them to learn how to do is also the other thing the Dodgers do, and that's sign guys off the scrap heap. Turn Andrew Heaney and Tyler Anderson into mid-rotation starters. And they're not there yet. So you hope
Well,
that
I
by the
mean,
time some of
to kind of buck that, isn't that what they did with Taiwan Walker?
degree, I think. I don't know that they really changed Walker all that much, right? I think they took more of a health-related gamble given his long history of shoulder problems, and he had shown a little bit of promise in Toronto at the end of the season prior to signing with the Mets. So I don't know that they actually took a guy and tweaked his pitch mix or changed the shape of his fastball or whatever and made him a lot better. I think they just took a health-related gamble there and it paid off. Whereas the Dodgers took Tyler Anderson and took Andrew Heaney and maximized their pitch characteristics. And I don't know that the Mets are in a spot to consistently do that yet. But you hope by the time that some of these deals fall off their cap sheet, they are in a position to sign a dude for $3 million and you're just kind of confident, oh, okay, they'll figure out how to make this work.
Sure. Yeah, and I will also add to that that, like, as far as, like, concern about the age of the rotation, which I think, like, I think you'd be silly if you weren't concerned about it at least a little bit. But I will point out that, like, not all age-related decline is created equal. And not all injury risk is created equal. Like, if you think about Justin Verlander, for example, he missed a significant amount of time, but that was because of a Tommy John, and he's come back and been fine. Compare that to Jacob DeGrom, who still has an unspecified UCL problem, and you're like, well,
among many other issues, yes.
Yeah, among many other, like, you know, he had a scapula issue and an unspecified elbow problem, mm-hmm. which is probably UCL related because Sandy Alderson said so, and then Jacob DeGrom was furious that he said so.
Yeah.
So, like, I mean, these two things are not created equal, right? And, like, with Max Scherzer, okay, yes, he did miss some time last season because he had an oblique injury. That is the type of thing that will happen, that is more likely to happen as you age, but he didn't have elbow problems and he didn't have shoulder problems. Jose Quintana has had shoulder problems in the past. So yes, that is an area of concern as well. So you think I somehow have actually slightly more concern about Quintana than I have about Verlander, despite the fact that Verlander is 40. Because of, like, the type of injuries that they were.
Yeah, and Lucas and I just talked about this too, which is just that because of Verlander having Tommy John relatively recently and having 2 years off essentially relatively recently, you think the injury risk is probably a little bit less severe than it would be for a 40-year-old who hasn't just had that amount of rest and elbow cleanup.
I mean, my big concern with Verlander and also Scherzer is that I think, and this is purely a theory because there's not a ton of guys who pitch to this age period for you to actually make models on it, but my suspicion is that once you get past a certain age, there's a heightened risk of just out of left field a cliff coming physically. And that's my big concern. It's not backed up by any data or anything solid. It's just a call it a paranoia, if nothing else. So that's my real concern with Verlander. And that was really an argument in favor of signing, like, Gossman over Scherzer or Rodon over Verlander. Like, from the back of the rotation, you sign whoever, it's a 2 year deal and you live with it, right? And if Quintana gets hurt and you have to start David Peterson 10 times, I know there's some serious David Peterson hate out there, and he's certainly not a top of the rotation guy, but it's not the end of the world, right? If David Peterson's your sixth starter, you're okay. If Jose Budo's your sixth starter, you are not okay.
Yeah. And I mean, again, we're not, all those innings don't have to be thrown by David Peterson. I mean, he's probably, like, the top of that pecking order right now, just because, like, Tyler McGill was hurt so much and Joey Lucchese was hurt so much. Well, he was recovering from Tommy John. In theory, he should be back, actually, and fully healthy, but we'll see what he looks like. And Eliezer Hernandez gives up a ton of homers. But, you know, like, at least you have alternatives to David Peterson if David Peterson is bad.
Yes.
Like, you don't have to just, like, keep throwing David Peterson out there.
Agreed. All right. Well, I think
hopefully McGill's shoulders. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you there.
That's right.
But hopefully McGill's shoulders healthy. I keep forgetting Lucchese's on this roster, and I don't know exactly what they're going to do with him. Yeah, I also wonder how many of these guys are going to wind up in the bullpen, which is mostly empty at the moment, and I would like the Mets to do something about soon.
They should change that. Well, Tommy Hunter's back.
Yes.
Oh, good. Good. Yes. Tommy Hunter setup man.
Listen, you. I mean, like, I do not support Tommy Hunter setup man, but I support potentially like Tommy Hunter, like
sixth
middle reliever.
Guy. Yeah.
Like he.
Oh God.
He legit.
He had
like
a very good season last year.
Last year.
Yeah.
He had a very good season. Really good when he. Before his back acted up on him again, he was actually very good. And I'm not entirely convinced that like those IL, those like back related IL stints. I mean, he had like a really serious back problem. Like that was real. But I think those IL stints at the end of the season were kind of phantom IL stints. Like mm-hmm. I'm not convinced that that was actually because his back was like because he couldn't pitch. Like, yeah, sure. Maybe he was a little sore. Like who isn't during the course of the season? But I think that just the Mets were doing some master roster manipulation, I think, with that. And like, you know, before that, he was very good, actually. Like he was serviceable, I think. I mean, like, again, I'm not saying you like hand him a job on opening day and like keep him in the bullpen all year by default. But I'm saying like for to have him back on a minor league deal, I think that's a very good move for the Mets.
Yeah, and you might get 1 month of Sean Reed Foley after Tommy John surgery.
That does not excite me as much.
No. It excites nobody, but that's okay. No, I mean, the bullpen is a concern for me. I actually may be convinced that you don't sign a fifth starter, but you sign three decent bullpen arms instead, if that's a choice you have to make. But hopefully they don't have to make that choice.
Yeah, look, in an ideal world, they're going to spend like another $50 million minimum in AAB. You simply, again, to our point about center field, like you can survive with the current rotation group. It's not ideal, but you can survive. I don't know that you can survive with the current center field situation or the on-demo alternatives, and you certainly cannot survive with the current bullpen. So there's still a lot of work to be done.
I think they know that. I think they're going to sign at least one or two really good relievers. Like they might bring back Ottavino and like sign Chafin and like do something like that.
Sure.
That'd be nice.
Sure.
They should. They have to. I mean, the bullpen is Edwin Diaz and Drew Smith and company. It like Steven Nogosek is like a setup man right now in this bullpen. Which I don't know if you buy the Steven Nogosek improvements were real, which I kind of do to a certain extent. Like his stuff looked really different than it did, you know, before. So that might be real, but you can't like bank on that.
Right.
The bullpen is always such a question mark. It's impossible to speak with any authority on what's going to happen for any of those people, right? Especially somebody who is young and untested, like a Nogosek is. So, I suppose
this goes back to Lucas's point about like being able to pick guys up off the scrap heap and optimize their talents, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there are teams that like the Dodgers that can build good bullpens that way and spend very little money doing it because they can just pick out guys who they realize like need some tweaks to their mechanics and then they'll be really good. And the Mets are seemingly incapable of developing relief pitchers like at all. I mean, Seth Lugo was kind of that. Drew Smith is kind of that now. But like if you can't develop these guys, you have to pick them up. And you know, the Mets did a decent job of that last year the last couple of years in like the Adam Ottavino signing, the Aaron Loop signing the year before that. So hopefully they can do that again.
I mean, not for nothing. I'm not necessarily saying that these guys are that, but Jimmy Yacobonis was signed, Jeff Brigham they traded for, William Woods and Steven Ridings off of waivers. Like, they are looking at bringing in these players that maybe a tweak could make a major improvement, but we just have no way of knowing that or knowing if this is just the Mets being cheap until much more information is at our fingertips, and who knows when that will be.
I think amassing those guys is a good thing, though, regardless. Like, they are doing the right thing as far as, like, amassing, like, because they realize how thin their high minors depth is. So I think that they are just amassing those guys, and that's good that they're doing that, but they need more than that.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, we had a whole podcast praising that, right, which was supposed to be just ranting for 20 minutes about how the Mets never do good things on the margins, and these are all good things on the margins.
Yes, they have done a good job on the margins already this offseason, I think.
Yeah, let's celebrate that. That's a good thing. And I have to say, even last year, they brought in, I mean, I just feel like bringing in a lot of bullpen arms was never the Wilpon strategy.
No.
Ever. So, you know, let us enjoy when they do that for
the
no
past couple
reason.
Of years, you know, we've already seen, like they did Joey Lucchese last year. You know, we're already starting to see the things that, like, make up a competent organization. Like, yeah. These are the types of things that, like, good organizations do every single offseason. And
right,
the Mets are only,
right,
like, just starting to figure out that they need to do it. But at least they're figuring it out.
I am totally blanking on the name, and my internet's running too slow to look it up to jeopardize the podcast. Who is the guy they signed in April that had Tommy John that they had an option on for this year that they picked up?
John Curtis.
There's another guy that maybe will be something.
Yes. He has options, I believe, as well. So
yes,
you'd ideally. I mean, I think the ideal bullpen construction here is that they sign 2 to 3 more legit guys, and then the rest you fill out with optionable arms that you can shuffle in and out. Now, unfortunately, Negosic doesn't have options, but Smith has options, I think. Bryce Montestoka has options. Brigham has options. Eliezer Hernandez has options. John Curtis has an option left. Eric Orsi would have an option. So would Woods and Ryder, who we just alluded to. So they've built up a kind of pile, so to say, of optionable bullpen arms, and I think you just need to sign the more reliable guys to fill out the back end of the bullpen, and then they're in a good spot.
I didn't realize Negosic was out of options, although that makes sense. And sadly, I think that means he's in the opening day bullpen.
Oh, yeah.
No, right. I don't think it's the end of the world.
It's
Negosic,
not, no.
It's your eighth relief.
Yeah, like
right.
He's the last guy. He should be the very last guy.
Yeah, agreed. Real quick before we go, Lucas, as our resident minor league expert on the call, mm-hmm. Do you think the Mets are going to do anything of interest in the Rule 5 draft? Are there any interesting names out there you can see the Mets picking up?
There are quite a few interesting names, and I'm the kind of sicko who loves this stuff. If you want a full discussion of this with everyone, go listen to last week's Term Complex to Queens, or is it this week's? Time is no meaning anymore. The most interesting one, I think, is Eric Miller. He's a lefty reliever in the Philly system that's probably major league ready, and the Mets have no lefty relief depth at the moment. Cameron Meisner is another interesting potential reserve outfield guy, though he's struck out a lot in the minors, but he's got speed, defense, power off the bench, and the Mets have no outfield depth. I'm also a big sucker for Ryan Noda. Now, he'd be another first base DH type for the Dodgers. I don't know that you can actually fit him on the roster, but I think he's very good and he should get a chance. And he's good enough that I might just draft him, see if he sticks in spring training, and then throw him back if that's what it comes to. So we talked about a couple other names beyond that, but those were the three that I found most interesting. I think Miller would really make a lot of sense for this roster. I hope they take a look at him if he's available when their pick comes up.
Thank you. Very, very good insight there, because I got none. So I appreciate you having a position on this.
The only thing I know about the Rule 5 draft is that, like, a few Amazing Avenue commenters are very mad online about the potential of losing Jake Mangum next year's starting center fielder.
There are literally six outfielders in the Rule 5 draft I can name off the top of my head in other organizations that are better than Jake Mangum. So. Look, if another team wants to take Jake Mangum and roster him all year, more power to you.
How many rounds is the Rule 5 draft?
2, 3.
Okay,
but basically, you can make as many selections as you want, because a lot of teams don't bother and just sell the picks for 2 cents. So
right.
You can take a bunch of guys, and I would love to see a really terrible team roster like 5 Rule 5 guys 1 year.
Yeah.
I think that'd be fun, but
Washington Nationals, that's your
music. Look, we can, and I don't mean to belabor this podcast too much longer, but there are too many teams that don't try in baseball, but I think there is a point where it makes sense to blow things up, and this is true across most sports. I would like to see one of these teams that's in one of the spots where you do have to blow up your roster and take a step back for a couple of years to actually try rostering a bunch of Rule 5 guys, because it'd be more interesting than what bad teams usually do, which is, I don't even know, just a bunch of whatever the Mets did circa 2010 to 2013.
Like, I would rather see a bunch of Rule 5 guys get their shot than trot out the, like, the husk of Aegon, which is what the Mets did. Like,
oh,
you
God.
Know what I'm saying?
Yes, yes.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And I think in some ways, if you're a system that is having a hard time developing people, it's pretty easy to just snag other people's half-developed prospects and make something of them than to try to start from scratch on your own. Just saying. But yeah, thank you for listening, folks. If the Mets do something else tomorrow, we'll have another one of these tomorrow, maybe. But you know, for now, please go to amazingavenue.com. We got lots of stuff about the winter meetings. We'll have lots of stuff about the Rule 5 draft. Allison's on Twitter at PetitePhD. Lucas is on Twitter at ElVlahos343. I am on Twitter at BrianEasyNap. And until next time, let's go Mets.